WWDC.com today.
Too many Kansas City schools underwater, forced to close, sadly. Hopefully, this isn't a precursor of things to come for others across the nation, as budgets are a big issue, right? Many of you know that, in fact. So what do? You try to do everything to stave off elimination, just like they do in sports. But then when it gets down to it, if you have no more money, you have nothing else to do but close the school, and what happens to those kids? Boy, that's a tough one. As they are re-racked and put into other schools, you can imagine what that is also doing to the district as a whole and the schools that now may find themselves in a bit of an overcrowding situation. And let's hope that doesn't tank the learning process for some of those kids that had to be moved. What a place to start here on America Tonight. Coming up, we are going to lighten the load. Kind of a little history lesson coming your way. St. Patrick's Day is next week, but what's the deal with St. Patrick? Did he really chase the snakes out of Ireland? Was he a slave at one point in his life? And what kind of influence did St. Patrick have that we may even actually feel today in this country? Questions abound. William Federer, noted historian, will join us to talk about such things coming up in our very next segment. So that means at the water cooler, you can wow your friends with your incredible knowledge over St. Patrick. It's not just about green beer, man. Here's what I heard on America Tonight. Wait till you hear this. I'll just give you a hint. Druids, nasty, bloody, fighting. Okay, that's enough of a hint. Speaking of nasty, I don't want to go off on a tangent on this, but let's just say I'm watching this closely, and we're going to have some people on to talk about this in the next couple of weeks. The problem with sex offenders and convicted sex offenders. And there are problems related to sex offender charges. But in the case of John Albert Gardner III, he was somebody who should never have been roaming the streets in the first place. He served 5 years in prison for molesting a 13-year-old neighbor. And when he was out, he was to serve 3 years of parole. And doing that parole, he had a simple violation. He lived too close to a school, but they let him remain free. Normally, he would have been evaluated and perhaps could have even ended up in a state mental hospital as a sexually violent predator. He would have also definitely qualified for wearing an electronic tracking device for the rest of his life. That didn't happen. He slipped through the cracks. So as a result, families are now mourning the deaths of their daughters, like the King family. They lost Chelsea King, who was just 17 years old. They found her buried in a park near her house north of San Diego after she had been missing for 5 to 6 days. The one silver lining is the tragedy of the King family helped lead to the body of another girl. This girl was missing for a year. 14-year-old Amber Dubois, who was walking to school in Escondido, and that's an area near San Diego, in early 2009, and they never found her. The family was more than distraught, still handing out flyers, talking to people, not willing to completely give up the hope that they couldn't find her. Well, they found her. They found her skeletal remains over the weekend on an Indian reservation. In defense, not my defense, but in defense of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, one of their spokespeople came out and said, hey, there was nothing to indicate that he would do this or allegedly do this. One can always look back, but we do not have the luxury. And what the spokesperson went on to say, because, of course, everybody's up in arms in California over this, is that he was considered to be a low or moderate risk sex offender based on what was in play at the time. But here's what I would say. One thing that would have helped and probably could have stopped, well, would have stopped this situation, was if he was nailed for the parole violation and being too close to the school, because he would have had that tracking thing on and it would have been, they would have been able to know where he was. So because that didn't happen, it may have led to the, partially led to the death of those two girls. The fact that he was out and, you know, that was the main thing, and nobody recognized. And I shouldn't say nobody, because there were people that examined him that thought he shouldn't have been released. So it's not 100% accurate by the people in the corrections system in California to say there was no way to look back and say he was capable of this, because, frankly, there were doctors that thought he was a risk. But here's what the problem is. The umbrella is so broad on sexual offenses that where you have a system for minor offenses, things that don't have to do with groping or molesting or even any of that kind of stuff, the problem is the lists that are created that aren't correct. They have to, I think they have to change those lists, and I think they have to reevaluate some of these people a little bit better, because and here was a situation where through the technical violation of the school situation, he would have been taken out of play. And if that had happened, then he wouldn't have had the opportunity to get to those two girls that he allegedly murdered. And they've got a lot of evidence on this one, so they should be able to nail him, you know, nail his case shut. But what does that really do for the family? If they, you know, the King family hopes that he gets capital punishment. The prosecutors will ask for it, so we'll see what happens there. But, you know, at the end of the day, after, if you go through all of that and that happens, and I think there would have to be some sense of relief, but it doesn't bring the young daughter back, who was a good student, who was well-liked, who just had all this potential in the world, and she is evaporated into thin air because there was a chance that he could have been taken off the streets, and it just didn't happen. And apparently he had an underlying mental disorder, and so there was a chance that he could reoffend. There were a few people that came forward and thought that, but hey, they didn't catch it, and that's the sad state of that one. I think over the last 2 weeks, probably one of the more depressing things that we've talked about. If the King family, and they will, this is going to be their cause, if they keep shining a light on this, perhaps some of the laws will change, and maybe some other young girl's life will be saved down the road because somebody didn't get out of prison. Quickly, here's one other quick one for you, and this has to do with Al-Qaeda. How about this out of New Jersey? An American charged in Yemen with being a member of Al-Qaeda had worked at a nuclear power plant in the United States. Yeah, how about that? A PSEG nuclear spokesperson had to step forward when they heard his name, Sharif Mobley. He worked as a laborer for several contractors at three plants on Artificial Island. He was carrying supplies, doing maintenance work, that kind of thing. Whew, that could have been a disaster, huh? Coming up next, we're going to talk about St. Patrick here on America Tonight.
Healthy Hearts Club presents Heart and Body Extract. Supports clean, clear arteries, healthy blood pressure levels, healthy circulation and blood flow, regular heart rate and beat. What if you could avoid heart attacks? What if you could avoid emergency room visits? What if you could avoid surgery? How? With this Heart and Body Extract, 100% organic, no negative side effects, guaranteed to work or your money back. Call now, 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. Or order online at heartandbody.com. Take the high road to a long and healthy life. 866-295-5305 or heartandbody.com.
for men who want intimacy and pleasure back in their life, it's not a question of if, but when. So, Ben, when you want the spark back in your love life, when you want to bring back intimacy, when you want to please the special woman in your life, use Mojo Rizin. Mojo Rizin is a safe, revolutionary herbal sexual formula for men that combines ancient Chinese school of thought and modern science to significantly support stamina, performance, and pleasure. Mojo Rizin is a proven 100% natural product that works the first time, every time. Mojo Rizin works even after consuming alcohol. Mojo Rizin will not give you unwanted side effects. Mojo Rizin will allow you to give your partner what they deserve. Try just 3 capsules of Mojo Rizin, and if not completely satisfied, send back the remainder for a full refund. Buy Mojo Rizin at mojo-radio.com. That's mojo-radio.com. Or call toll-free 1-877-330-1120. That's 1-877-330-1120. Go big, go strong with Mojo Rizin all night long.
Lose 1 to 2 pounds a day the healthy way and keep it off with the help of the entire Real HCG diet. With an average weight loss of 1.5 to 2 pounds a day, you can be in that bikini or swimming suit in no time. You've heard of people spending over $700 for this exact same diet at doctor's offices? Now you can start the entire HCG diet for under $100. YourHCG.com is the largest HCG reseller in the entire country, and we want to help you. We have helped thousands of people shed unwanted weight, so call YourHCG.com today. No prescription required. No doctor visit required. No painful injections. With every purchase, we'll provide you with everything you need, including your supply of HCG, unlimited one-on-one phone and email support from one of our amazing health coaches, in addition to a large list of menus, diets, and much more. Visit www.yourhcg.com or call us at 877-748-2709 to order your HCG today. Again, that's 877-748-2709 at yourhcg.com. We love you.
Day. But what is St. Patrick's Day all about? Growing up in New York and New Jersey, everybody was Irish. I came from an Irish-American family, but everybody on my block wanted to be Irish. They all wore green. They were afraid of getting pinched. And they definitely liked the green beer and the parades. Any excuse to take off of school when we were kids and in high school. But I think people don't know too much about good old St. Patrick. What did he do 1,500 years ago? We are so pleased to have on our show, absolutely acclaimed historian William Federer. And he is also the president of Amerisearch, and he has written a ton of books, including St. Patrick, the real story of his amazing life from tragedy to triumph. Thanks for coming on America Tonight, William. We appreciate it.
It's great to be with you.
Hey, as I said, I think that, and you certainly would know better than I, you've done so much research on it, but what do you think is the biggest misconception about St. Patrick?
Well, the three-leaf clover was used to teach the Trinity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, 3-in-1. And the fact that he was a missionary, that people think that, that he found Ireland heathen, drew it, and left it Christian. Started 300 churches and baptized 120,000 people. And the fact that he was very courageous, you're used to seeing the Lucky Charms and the little, magic guy on the cart, the cereal box. But actually, he was in life-threatening situations at least a dozen times. The Druids tried to kill him. And he was very, strong and strong in faith as well. One of the other interesting things is the setting in which he lived. And that's sort of similar to what we're going through, that it was during the fall of the Roman Empire. Rome had been this empire that was 1,000 years old, from 753 BC all the way up to 476 AD. And Patrick was born, they think, around 389 A.D., so about less than a century before the fall of Rome. Mm-hmm. And Rome was being invaded by illegal immigrants. They were the Ostrogoths and Visigoths and Anglos and Saxons and Jutes. And as these different tribes began to invade the Roman Empire, they first would come across slowly and learn the Latin language and work as servants. Some of them were slaves. And matter of fact, the word Slav was the name for a glorious one, like Slovenia, Yugoslav, Czechoslav. And but the Romans had captured so many of the Slavic people and made them servants that it took the permanent connotation of slave. That's where the pronunciation came from. But anyway, as these different tribes came over the borders of the Roman Empire so fast that they didn't bother learning the Latin language, and they kept their own German, French, and Anglo languages. Meanwhile, Rome had its military stretched around the world, putting out these global fires, and they had a small military, but it was very mobile with the road system, and they couldn't sustain long and dry engagements, and so that's why the Romans had to raise taxes. And so one historian said the tax collector was worse than the enemy. So you're getting barbarians on one side and the tax collector on the other. And then the whole city of Rome was on welfare. That's how the politicians kept in power. They would give away free bread. There's a saying, bread and the circus. And that's how they appeased the masses in Rome, bread and the circus. Well, now, the circus wasn't with clowns. It was the Circus Maximus, the Colosseum, where they had the bloody fighting to the death. And the gladiators and animals and, you know, throwing Christians in there before 313 when Constantine became a Christian. Then that the Christian part stopped. But they still had gladiatorial events, and they had a lot of immorality. Rome had a history, if you ever visit Pompeii, a lot of sexual immorality, and they had exposure of unwanted infants. This was their version of abortion, but the mother would bear the child, lay it at the father's feet, and if he picked it up, they'd keep it. If not, the mother would have to get rid of the baby and put it out in the woods or in some pagan temple, and a lot of the early Christians would hear those babies and gather them up, and many became great leaders. Rome had outsourced all its grain production to North Africa. That was the grain basket. And when one of the tribes began to overrun the Roman Empire, the Vandals, that was actually the name of the tribe. You can imagine what they did when they went through town. They vandalized. That's where that word came from. But the Vandals captured North Africa, cut off the grain supply, and Rome was brought to its knees. Very similar today, we've outsourced everything to China. And imagine for a moment if China holds their ships back for 3 months, all of our Walmart shelves will be empty. Our entire retail industry will grind to a halt, and everybody will say, government, give them Taiwan, just get the economy going again. Anyway, so when the Vandals captured North Africa, brought Rome to its knees, and then to top it off, they began to have terrorist attacks. Attila the Hun, wiping out whole cities, and as a result, Rome had to call its legions, its troops, back from the frontier settlements to protect the city of Rome. And so Britain, which had been a Roman colony for a couple hundred years, was now left unprotected because the Roman legions left. And so here's where Patrick enters into the story. Different marauding tribes, sort of like Vikings, but they were actually a couple centuries later. But these marauding bands would attack in Britain and carry away thousands as slaves, and that's when Patrick was captured, taken to Ireland with thousands of others, and sold into slavery. And they think this is around 405 A.D., Patrick is now in Ireland, which is ruled by the Druids. Druids were believed in human sacrifice. They believed the woods were filled full of spirits that constantly needed to be appeased. Every now and then they'd have to sacrifice a human to appease these spirits. But that's where the trick-or-treat came from on Halloween. I mean, Halloween came from the Druids. And they thought the spirits that inhabited the woods were like, you know, poltergeists and sprites and elves and leprechauns. So the leprechaun was more or less like the little demon. And if anything, Patrick would have chased him out, not pictured as one.
Sure.
But here's Patrick. He's 16 years old, and he's a slave for Milchu, who was a Druid chieftain. And he would tend sheep. He'd be up in the mountains. He'd pray. And this is where he begins to remember the faith of his parents. Now, he confesses, later in life, he wrote his confessions called The Confession of Patrick. And it's a document that all historians acknowledge that he indeed wrote. And sort of how after he did all the great things that he did, the church leadership back in Britain accused him of not having been a believer as a teenager. And they wanted him to come back to Britain for a little sit-down talk. And he refused to go. He said God called him to Ireland as a missionary, and he was going to stay there. And so he wrote his life story and sent it. And so that's what his confession is. So had they not accused him, he never would have written it. Sort of like if Paul was never thrown in prison, he never would have written half the New Testament. But so here is Patrick. He's 16 years old. He's there in Ireland. He begins to remember his parents' Christian faith. And he prays, and he says many times a day, he pray 100 times through snow, through frost, through rain, up in the mountains, in the woods and fields. And he said one time he was fasting, and he had a dream. And in this dream, he heard a voice telling him that his ship was ready and that he should escape. And so he leaves his master, goes a couple hundred miles to the shore. There's a boat putting wolfhounds on it to take to Europe to sell his hunting dogs. And he gets passage on the boat. The dogs obey him, and he gets shipwrecked. There's a storm, and he lands in southern France and Gaul, which was being, you know, attacked by Visigoths and different tribes. But after a few years, Patrick hitchhikes his way, if you can imagine that, you know, back to Britain. And so he's reunited with what's left of his family, and it's pretty uneventful till he turns 40 years old. And then at 40 years old, he has another dream, and he writes in his confession that in the midst of the night, he saw a man named Victoricus coming as if from Ireland with innumerable letters. And he handed one to me, and he said that he heard at that moment the voice of those who were beside the wood of Falkirk on the Western Sea in Ireland, crying, "Please, holy boy, come and walk among us again."
Wow. Hang on a second here, William. We have to step aside. Can you hang on for a few more minutes, and then we'll come right back to the story?
Sure.
And we'll finish it up on the flip side for just a few minutes, because it's probably way past his bedtime. We're so thrilled to have him with us. William Federer, historian, telling us all about St. Patrick. That's up next on ATN.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com. Or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
You're listening to GCN, Genesis Communications Radio Network.
A revolution in smoking is underway, a revolution all smokers of traditional cigarettes should know about. Keep listening for a special offer from PowerVapor.com. Standard tobacco cigarettes contain over 4,000 harmful chemicals. Now it's time to release yourself from the grip of big tobacco and experience true smoking freedom. PowerVapor.com is an e-cigarette with the look, feel, and smoke of a real cigarette, but with no tar, no carbon monoxide, and no bad odors.
Power Vapor's e-cigarettes deliver just the right amount of nicotine in a water vapor that looks and feels like real smoke. Yes, you choose from four levels of nicotine, and that puts you back in control. Plus, you'll enjoy eight flavors and big savings over traditional cigarettes. Get the facts and see our demonstration video at PowerVapor.com. That's PowerVapor.com. Log on to PowerVapor.com right now for a special 10% discount and 30-day money-back guarantee. PowerVapor.com, the smoking gun heard round the world.
You just might be only a few meals away from anarchy. Look at the recent world events and even the economic crisis. The time to prepare yourself and your family is now.
Now, now.
For 1 week only, Ready Made Resources offers all GCN listeners 25% off on all Mountain House case lots.
And that includes free shipping.
Go to readymaderesources.com to see the variety of our quality Mountain House foods in a wide selection for every taste. Mountain House foods have a 25-year shelf life and are easy to prepare. Just add water for great tasting snacks or meals.
Yes, there is a catch.
This 25% off of case lots only lasts through March 15th. Hurry, go to readymaderesources.com or call toll free 1-800-627-3809 and mention GCN to get 25% off per case of Mountain House Foods with free shipping. That's 800-627-3809 or go to readymaderesources.com. Hurry, sale ends March 15th.
I love gardening. What I don't love to see is deer and rabbits destroy my beautiful plants.
Why let your garden be destroyed? Plant Skin Repellent protects your garden, trees, and landscaping from wildlife damage. Made in the USA from 100% organic environment and pet-friendly ingredients, Plant Skin is the number one, most tested, most effective, and longest-lasting deer and rabbit repellent you can buy. It lasts up to 6 months over winter and 3 to 4 months during the active spring-summer growing season. Unlike other repellents, Plant Skin will not wash off in the rain and is guaranteed to outlast and outperform all other repellents. Plant Skin is OMRI-listed organic and is proven effective protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents. That's why PlantSkid is used by leading forest companies, nurseries, and conservation agencies, and is member-tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Locate a dealer nearest you at PlantSkid.com. Proven plant protection, guaranteed, or your money back. Go to PlantSkid.com. That's plant, SKYDD.com today.
We're continuing our conversation with historian William Federer about St. Patrick, who, in fact, he's written a book called St. Patrick, The Real Story of His Amazing Life, as we mentioned before, From Tragedy to Triumph. You were just, William, getting into the juicy stuff, and I am sucked into this tale, so pick it up when he's there in Ireland and what happens after that.
Well, about the same time Attila the Hun is attacking the Roman Empire is when Patrick, with a band full of guys, goes to Ireland. And his style of evangelism was top-down. In other words, he courageously would go right into the smoky dens of these Druid chieftains and preach to them in their own language, which he had learned when he had been a slave. And he went into one, a King Longer or Leary, and the Druids wanted to kill Patrick right away. They recognized this new religion would displace them from their position of influence with the chieftains. And so, but this particular chieftain said, well, don't kill this guy. We don't get visitors that often, and here he's speaking our language. And so he converted and gave him a plot of land, and Patrick built his first church. And there were about 30 chieftains across Northern Ireland, and his very confrontational style resulted in them trying to kill him at least a dozen times. He said, daily I expect murder, fraud, captivity. They'd lay ambushes for him. One chieftain had soldiers in a valley that Patrick was going to cross through, and The next day, the only thing they had seen go through was a deer, yet Patrick was on the other side of the valley. And so they call his prayer the deer's cry. Evidently, the story is that he was praying this prayer, and it's, you know, Christ before me, Christ beside me, Christ within me, Christ, you know, to guide me. And anyway, there's the famous contest at Tara, and the chieftain would have everybody extinguish their fires, and if anybody was caught with their fires still burning, they would get killed. Talk about a government that was pretty encroaching into your lives here. Well, this particular evening when everybody's fires were extinguished and they're all going to the Druids with gifts to get coals to relight their fire, Patrick goes to the highest hill and lights a bonfire. And the hill's still there to this day. It's called Croag Patrick, which means Hill of Patrick. And so he lights this bonfire, and everybody says to the chieftain, well, what about that guy? And so the chieftain sends 27 chariots of men up to kill Patrick. And the 6th century historian Marucci says that as they came, Patrick cried in a loud voice, may God come and scatter his enemies. And 7 times 7 men fell. And the king, driven by fear, came on bent knee before the holy man. And so that was Patrick's style. Another one was where the Druid conjured up a fog, and the fog was so thick, and Patrick wasn't impressed. He said, well, now disperse the fog, and the guy couldn't. And so Patrick prays, and the cloud parts, and the light comes out. And then it says that the Druid was consumed with fire. I don't know where that came in, but nevertheless, the chieftain was all upset, and Patrick said, the same thing's going to happen to you unless you convert. And now, it's hard to, you know, separate fact from legend, sure. But these are the stories that were passed down, and nevertheless, Patrick did cause such an impact that Ireland became one of the most Christian countries. And it's interesting, the churches he started were very independent. You have to remember, Rome was being attacked, so these were not connected. They were stone walls around the community, and you know, the stone church, and then a tower, and they would build these towers with the door about 20 feet up with a big wooden ladder. And when these marauding bands, you know, later the Vikings would attack, everybody would climb up the ladder into the tower, pull the ladder up behind them, and then let the marauding bands pillage for a while, and then they'd finally leave, and you'd climb back down and rebuild. And but these 300 churches were very independent. And after Patrick died, and of course he died on March 17th, they think around 461 A.D., and, you know, sort of parenthetically, here we are 1,600 years later, still talking about this guy, the tremendous impact that he had. But in the next century, it was those churches that he started that sent missionaries back to England, Britain, to evangelize the Scots and the Picts and the Anglos and the Saxons, and then back into Europe. One of the Irish missionaries was named Columbanus, and he started over 100 mission outposts, monasteries in Europe, which converted those heathen hordes that had overrun the Roman Empire. So it sort of came full circle. I have my book where I quote excerpts from Thomas Cahill's book, How the Irish Saved Civilization. But this idea that, you know, Rome was conquered by these heathen hordes, Ireland was this little outpost, but then Ireland sent the missionaries back. And I could go on. It's a fascinating, fascinating story. That now, in 1846, there was an Irish potato famine. And millions Catholics came to America.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about that. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the potato famine, I mean, there's even a famous memorial now. I've been to it several times in New York, which signifies all the different counties in Ireland. And I think most Americans understand that there was a potato famine, but I don't think they really know what was behind that whole thing. So, yeah, tell us about that.
Well, the potato came from the Yucatan Peninsula down in Mexico when Columbus and the Spaniards brought it back to Europe, along with chocolate and tomatoes and other things. And it was a plant that was a great source of protein and of carbohydrates. And so spread across Europe and Ireland, it was sort of unique. It was a part of Britain, and it was mostly Catholic. And so the British didn't let them vote. and changed their laws of inheritance, where when somebody died, their property had to be divided up amongst all their children. And so that broke estates down so that there wouldn't be any rich lords that could challenge the monarch. That was the attitude behind it. Sort of like inheritance taxes, like, you know, what they wanted to pass here. But so the average farms in Ireland were very, very small, and potatoes were the best crop to get the most carbohydrates per acre. So everybody in Ireland was growing potatoes. And in 1846, there was a famine, and the famine killed all the potatoes. Millions of Irish died over in Ireland, and that's when there was this mass migration of Irish to America. They'd come to Boston, New York, and so forth. And now, in Britain, their numbers didn't make a difference. They didn't have the power to vote. But when they got to New York and Boston, then they began to have their first St. Pat's Day parade, and all the politicians said, wait a second, these people haven't decided what party to belong to yet, and they began to march in the parades, and so that's when their parades took on a political aspect that did allow them to rise in you know, within about 20 years, they constituted 50% of New York City, so it was a of course, St. Pat's Cathedral. St. Patrick's Cathedral is right there in New York. That's where Franklin Roosevelt married his fifth cousin, Eleanor Roosevelt, on St. Pat's Day. And it was Teddy Roosevelt that walked Eleanor down the aisle. He was president at the time. So St. Pat's Day in 1909 was a big deal there in New York. And up until 1964, the majority of immigrants to America, the largest source was from Germany, England, and Ireland. And it was after 1964 that they changed the quotas to enhance more people that would come and more or less become Democrats. So that's what the idea of helping different parties to stay in power. But one little interesting thing is that these the Druids were the chieftains, but they also had the laws, and they memorized the laws, and they would sing the laws, and they were called Brehons, which is where we get the word Brian. And when they converted to Christianity, these Brehon, you know, judges would sing the gospel, and sometimes like memorize all 150 psalms and sing them every day, and they'd have these huge choirs, and they would sing, and and that's when the harp became the symbol of Ireland. And they used to say that even the angels would bend over their ears to the earth to hear the Irish sing. So so when these missionaries began to spread to England and Europe, they not only took the gospel, they took the code of Patrick, because Patrick took the laws of Ireland, but he combined them with the laws of the Bible, and became the Code of Patrick, and this became the basis for English common law. And, of course, English common law became the basis for American law. So even Patrick influenced our legal system in America.
Wow, so you really have educated us tonight and filled in a few blanks for me, certainly, on the kind of influence he had. I knew some of that, but I certainly didn't know that you could take it all the way up to English common law. Fascinating stuff. Hey, one quick one. We're almost out of time, William, but have you ever been to the big parade in New York?
No, but my wife's half Irish. She's a half Callahan. And her mom was the oldest of 13 Callahans, and so I love the Irish because I married one. So
I love that. That's great. Well, happy St. Patrick's Day to you, and thanks for giving us that history lesson. I'm sure the people across the country listening now are much more better informed on St. Patrick's. You enjoy St. Patrick's Day.
Well, thanks. And AmericanMinute.com is my website if anybody wants to get the book.
Excellent. AmericanMinute.com. Thank you. And again, the book is St. Patrick, the real story of his amazing life from tragedy to triumph. Hang with us.
Is it safe to breathe anymore? Crowded public places, global pandemics, and news reports of potential new strains of bacteria and viruses make you wonder, what if there was a germ-killing nasal spray that acted almost like hand sanitizer for your nose? There is. It's called Sinofresh Homeopathic Nasal Spray, and it's a proven germ killer. Sinofresh is a revolutionary doctor-recommended nasal spray that kills a broad spectrum of viruses, bacteria, molds, and fungi on contact in your nose. Sinofresh causes no drug interactions, no loss of smell, no rebound congestion, contains no alcohol, is non-habit forming, and is safe for daily use. Sinofresh must be a part of your family survival plan. Go to GCNlive.com now and click on the Sinofresh banner. The first 1,000 customers to click on the Sinofresh banner and purchase Sinofresh antiseptic nasal spray are instantly registered to win a free 24-bottle case. Go to GCNlive.com and click on Sinofresh. Breathe free. Breathe safe. Use Sinofresh. It works.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Who is Sam Andy? Sam Andy Foods is life insurance in a can. Life insurance you can eat. Sam Andy Foods has been serving loyal customers worldwide for over 50 years. Why so long? Simple. Sam Andy Foods have perfected the taste and quality of low-moisture foods. Foods that last 15 to 25 years. And that's made us an industry leader among families, sportsmen, outdoorsmen, churches, schools, people living in remote areas, U.S. troops in wartime, and many others. Sam Andy is America's leading supplier of over 100 high-quality, low-moisture products and everything you need to survive in any emergency. Visit SamAndy.com today for your free full-color catalog and free trial subscription to the Survival Times newsletter. That's SamAndy.com. Just like it sounds, SamAndy.com. Or call toll-free 1-888-331-0358. Your one-stop shop for everything your family needs to prepare for any emergency. Sam Andy Foods. Life insurance in a can.
Interesting what's happened with social networking, how it's changed the fates and fortunes of a lot of people, including, just for fun, Betty White. She's going to host Saturday Night Live on May 8th. Yes, that's the number, May 8th. Remember it, because I think it could be a clever, and I usually don't like Saturday Night Live anymore, but could be a clever edition of it. Because here's the deal. They're going to reunite six former female SNL cast members. That's Mother's Day. And most of them are also moms. Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Molly Shannon, Maya Rudolph, and Rachel Dratch. Also, Anna Gaster is also going to be part of that crew, too. I think that's how you say her last name. And anyway, what happened was, after the Super Bowl, and she was part of a funny ad for Snickers during the Super Bowl, there was kind of like this movement to get Betty White on Saturday Night Live. And the producers of Saturday Night Live took notice, so she's going to host it. White is 88 years old, and she has no kids. She does have a golden retriever, Pontiac. So that might be, like I said, one of their better episodes. I can almost see in my mind some of the sketches. This is kind of a sad weekend count, but the 8.8 earthquake that slammed into the west coast of Chile last month was actually violent enough to move the city of Concepcion at least 10 feet, they say, to the west, and the capital, Santiago, about 11 inches to the west-southwest, according to researchers. Wow, how about that? And then you already know this. I think I mentioned this on a show last week, but NASA scientists are saying that the quake shifted the Earth's axis enough to create shorter days. The change is maybe a little bit negligible, but worth mentioning, because each day should be 1.26 microseconds shorter, according to some of the calculations. So that's what happened there. Wow. Interesting numbers, to say the least. As we continue on our way through this segment called We Can Count, here's another one for you. The feds are saying that trendy sushi bars have been serving whale meat. Ooh, I hope not in the U.S. But yes, it's true. There are people that are now suspected of serving up the whale, as I said. And the misdemeanor charge, if you are caught serving up meat from a whale, which is an endangered species, is illegal to consume, of course, in the United States. It carries up to a federal prison sentence of up to a year, but this is your other number part, a fine of $200,000. And there have been several investigations. Now, what's interesting here is the movie The Cove won an Academy Award for Best Documentary, and I happened to see that movie. It was done rather well and exposed the people in this Japanese village for what they were doing and how they were killing dolphins. Oof, unbelievable. And in the movie, one of the things that they show you is the fact that in some cases people don't realize what they're eating. So that's happened a couple of times, I guess, in Los Angeles, and through investigation, they were able to get enough of the goods on a couple of people, and they may be able to nail them and prosecute them. A U.S. attorney is going after folks that, you know, are serving up whale. They believe they're serving up whale because you should be able to go into a restaurant, order, and not order a plate of an endangered species. I'd have to agree with that. You know, the country in Japan, the country's annual whale hunt, because they have a whale hunt, it kills up to 1,000 whales a year, they say. Could actually be more, but they peg it at 1,000. Ooh, that's a depressing number. If you get a chance to see that documentary, you know, if you get on demand, it's probably on HBO, I think, has the documentaries, and check it out. It's short. I don't know, maybe it's an hour, maybe it's an hour and a half, but it's worth a view, because you'll be surprised for sure by what you'll see in that documentary. Okay, also in We Can Count, what is your 12-year-old doing? Perhaps abusing inhalants. You know, the more I read these reports, the more I don't want to read them. And I'm sure anybody with children would feel the same way, but this apparently is one of the, I don't know that it's a new high, because I think it's actually, when I was a kid, I can remember some people talking about it, but a new report that's been released talks about the amount of 12-year-olds abusing inhalants, and apparently it's pretty widespread. Depends on the school district. I mean, they're divvying it up to districts and areas, but they're saying a rough guesstimate is maybe up to 5,000 to 6,000 kids annually are suffering from almost fatal experiences, and that's a pretty broad number, as a result of abusing inhalants. Wow, pardon me for saying this twice in a row, but as much as I know it was talked about when I was a kid, and I just can't remember it being that big of a deal, but apparently now, you know, you, the older kids have the farm parties that we've talked about on this show, and perhaps some of the younger kids, that's their way to get that feeling, or they see other people doing it. Who knows? All right, here's another one for you from We Can Count. The 661 auto dealers that General Motors offered a second chance at are still waiting for details on the terms of their reprieve. How odd is that? In fact, somebody was doing a story on them, and one of the dealers said, you know, the odd thing is I have no idea what to expect. I don't know. I haven't been given a scorecard or what we're supposed to do. So that's kind of worrisome, isn't it? That the people who are wheeling and dealing, so to speak, on the front lines have no idea, now that they've been saved, they have no idea what it is that's ultimately expected of them and what they're supposed to do. In other words, it's like any job. You have a certain set of, you have your own expectations, let's say, but you have a certain list of duties and what you're supposed to hit, like numbers. So GM and Chrysler used their bankruptcy proceedings last spring to thin out the dealers, and they target about 3,000 different dealerships for termination, but some of the dealers fought back and were able to save their dealerships. And Congress offered to enter arbitration with some dealers who wanted to appeal the fact that they might have lost the dealerships. And, you know, on last Friday, GM announced a kind of a change of heart and said, not kind of, a change of heart for sure. And they said that they would reinstate hundreds of those who filed for arbitration. So that would be a great news, but they don't, you know, it's been over a week and they haven't heard anything about the deal, so they have no idea what is expected. That's a big number. 661 GM dealers getting another shot. I mean, and some of the people on some of these lots have been selling cars for their entire life, so they had to breathe a sigh of relief, but still they don't know. And, you know, it's interesting, of the 789 Chrysler dealerships chosen in May for termination, 418 of those applied for arbitration, and just under 400 are still in the running. There's a mid-June deadline for the arbitration hearings to wrap up, so they're going to go through it with the Chrysler folks. Over the weekend, if you're thinking of things and stuff that you'd like to talk about on America Tonight, or perhaps you have a guest in mind, shoot it to me. And how do you do that? Of course, you know, I sing the same old tune, americatonight.net.
Sending you back to the future!